Welcome to the Story Night podcast. Tonight, November 29th at 7 p.m., Story Night presents Living Without, Stories of Letting Go, with three featured storytellers followed by an open story slam. This will be a powerful show, and we hope to see you there. To preview the theme for tonight's event, today we're offering a podcast-exclusive story from, well, me, Jessica Holmes, the host, marketing director, and a co-founder of Story Night. Though I now stand up on stage every month, for a long period of my life, I was a shy, silent introvert. In this story, I reveal how living without speech led me to Russia, where living without speech changed my entire point of view. Speak memory, as Nabokov would say. For over a decade, I lived without speech, but it wasn't until Russia that I learned what letting go really means. As a child, I was called shy, introverted, a loner, a bookworm, but to me, it felt like I had some preternatural sensitivity to the condition of living, so that every word from another person's mouth and every gesture or slight carried so much weight in my tiny worldview. Signs and symbols, Nabokov would call it. Everything petrified me. Every interaction was laced with so much meaning that it left me mute, stiff, abashed, and above all, silent. I was a shy child and a quiet, depressive teenager. I didn't have many actual conversations with my actual peers. Instead, I had Russian literature, Crime and Punishment, War and Peace, The Brothers Karamazov, A Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich, Yevgeny Onegin. The names alone gave me chills. I was so disillusioned with my suburban strip mall life in Boise. I wanted people to discuss matters of the soul. I wanted suffering and longing. I wanted real passion. I wanted a true life. I wanted Russia. When I was 18, just a few weeks before graduating from high school, I made the procrastinated decision to join a foreign exchange program called AFS. By the time I submitted my application, only a few countries were still available, Latvia and Russia. In late August, with only a few lazy days with a Berlitz language book under my belt, I left for Russia and landed at the Sheremetyevo airport in another world. It was 1998, a difficult period for Russia. During my stay, their currency devalued eightfold, Yeltsin kicked out his prime minister, and the coldest winter in recent memory descended, reaching temperatures of 40 below, which, in the conversion from Celsius to Fahrenheit, remains 40 below, a mathematical fact that first baffled, then alarmed me. After I passed through customs, a rusted 1970s bus greeted the exchange students and drove us to a resort hotel in the pastoral forest outside of Moscow. My most vivid memory of that night is of standing around a bonfire at the back of the resort, with over 116 to 18-year-olds from around the world, Scandinavian, South American, North American, European, Asian, all singing Let It Be by the Beatles, because it was a song we all knew, because it was universal. I ended up in a town called Nagingsk, 40 miles east of Moscow. It was a typical Russian suburban town with Soviet-style architecture. Big, blocky concrete buildings, sometimes painted in pastels. The occasional statue or bust of Lenin, no Stalins, not anymore, in front of unassuming grocery stores. I lived in a two-bedroom apartment with the Boldinovas, a family of four, two teenage girls, Marina and Luda, and their parents, Larissa and Nikolai. I shared a small room with the girls, and we tried to communicate in stunted ways. They spoke barely any English, and I slowly realized that hardly anyone else in the town of 100,000 did either. In speech, I felt like a baby again, born into a strange world of Cyrillic spidery letters and hard consonants. I may have been quiet in America, but the silence in Russia was different. There's an undercurrent of white noise speech in everyone's life. The radio, the TV, the conversations of strangers, the billboards and signs. It fills the quiet cracks in our days. All that disappeared. And there I was in a silent prison with my mind. It's not easy living completely alone with yourself. We are affected by the world of words in small and large ways. Even the white noise variety. Words give us something to react to think about, to root us in our place and time. Without that, and in a completely foreign world, I met myself. And what a total bore. What a nonsensical chatterbox. My mind would flit from one petty thought to another, exposing my idealistic and unrealistic fantasies that, yes, sometimes mirrored the plot lines of Russian novels. I would listen to myself and think, what do I know, really, about anything? What really is real? And will you please shut up already? To answer these questions, I tried to start over. I tried to reshape my worldview on firmer ground. I would walk around the stadium outside our brick apartment complex and look at the color of grass and at the yellowing leaves and white bark of the birch tree forest that stood at one end of the field. I would pick up worms to note their color, cataloging the shade in my growing list of browns, which also included coarse, cheap Russian tobacco and dark rye bread. This obsessive observation of the physical world was my only reprieve from myself, and I escaped often. As the fall turned into bitter winter, and snow blanketed the ground, and gray became the perpetual color of the sky, I learned to find beauty in the shades of purple and red that flesh turns when in contact with extreme cold. I learned to love the variations in boldness and rust. I lingered over the brilliant purple of borscht and the red of klukva berries served with clear, potent vodka, a non-color distinctly different from the clear white of a raw egg or the thin membrane of an onion. Of course, the real Russia is not the one of Russian novels. From what I could gather, teenagers spoke of Britney Spears and the Titanic more than they did matters of the soul. Still, in Russia, I found the passion and truth that I'd wanted for so many years at a museum named for Pushkin, the poet prodigy godfather of Russian literature. The Pushkin Museum is in Moscow. Trips there became important to me, because even in the stone-cold bleakness of a Russian winter, Moscow is beautiful. Even on the grayest days, the golden cupolas of the city glow and seem to undulate in the skyline. A month into my silent odyssey, my Russian sister and mother took me to the Pushkin Museum, which happened to be hosting a special exhibit of paintings by Paul Cézanne. It's difficult to describe the experience of seeing Cézanne with this freshly scrubbed, color-focused mind of mine. It was like I had been in some deprivation-focused Olympian-scale training program for just this moment. I had and have never seen anything like these paintings. A bowl of fruit on a table, but each apple so layered with subtle variations of color that they seem to be almost real with the weight of paint, then infused with an inner light, the curves in the tablecloth, every shade of blue and white, the browns of the table, every idea of brown, so structural, so layered. I would stand in front of each painting for 20 minutes, half an hour, more, absorbed by Cézanne's colors. One time, one of the middle-aged babushka security guards who scowl in the corner of each room at people who stand too close to the paintings stepped out of her spot to stand behind me. She returned shaking her head with the look on her face of, I don't get it. Even 12 years later, I vividly recall the paintings of Cézanne's wife in an armchair, the stripes of her skirt, the wallpaper, the upholstery. All the colors seemed to be lit from within, while her eyes were flat and black and empty. And I realized that I had found all the passion and intensity that I had been looking for all those years. But it wasn't in an idealized novel world. It was a clarity of mind that allowed me to encounter genius and stand in front of it and really, truly get it. Cézanne gave me a sense of truth again. I realized that perhaps all any of us has of the world is in our perception of it. But sometimes that perception is everything and is beautiful. After that, I sometimes looked at Russia with Cezanne eyes, in layers and layers of ever-shifting color. When I left Russia 6 months after arriving, I felt like I was letting go of an entire universe, an alternate life. Living without speech, I learned how to see. I learned that much of what we say is nonverbal. I learned we know and understand so much by sight, that even in the coldest places, you find the warmest hearts. It was like the ending to one of those 1,000-page novels, an ending you mourn to say goodbye. But one populated by real people, with names like Marina and Ludmila Nikolaevna Boldinova, who took in a shy American named Jessica Elizabeth Holmes, took her to Moscow, and warmed her soul. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tonight at 7 p.m. at the Linen Building for Living Without, Stories of Letting Go. Story Story Night is now also looking for featured storytellers for our December 27th show, Going Home, Stories Are Returning. To be considered, email the beginning, middle, and end of your true story on the theme to storystorynight@live.com by December 6th. Find all the submission details at www.storystorynight.org under Featured Storytellers. Story Story Night is brought to you by presenting partners the Boise State Story Initiative and The Cabin, venue partner The Linen Building, design partner Neighborhood All-Stars, and our broadcast partner, Boise State Public Radio. Please donate now at radio.boisestate.edu. Our Story Story Night theme is by Dan Costello. Hear more at hearcostello.com. Please join us next week for the first installment from tonight's event, Living Without, Stories of Letting Go. Learn more at storystorynight.org. My Russian grandmother taught me this song. I think it has something to do with dreams. Oh, tone vechor, mnie malim malo spalos. Mnie malim malo spalos. Ой, да вас не привиделось. Мне мало-мало спалось. Ой, да вас не привиделось.